With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Cutting through the clutter, this is the Misty Winston Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the Misty Winston Show here on TNT Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. I truly appreciate it. So Dan Cohen, my friend Dan Cohen, journalist, is on the show today. We're going to be bringing him in shortly. But first, we need to talk. Something very serious has happened. So my friend Kit Clarenberg, who is another amazing journalist, I really cannot praise him enough. He is truly fantastic. He's been doing just unbelievable work for years now. He was recently detained at the Luton Airport in London and subjected to extended interrogation regarding his work and his political views. So this is crazy. The story is crazy. So there's an article up written by Max Blumenthal, who is the editor-in-chief and founder of The Gray Zone, which is where Kit Clarenberg does a majority of his work currently. So if you want to go and check out the full article, it is rather lengthy. So I'm obviously not going to be able to go through all of it here. But this is a major story. So this is from the article. As soon as journalist Kit Clarenberg landed in his home country of Britain on May 17th, 2023, six anonymous plainclothes counterterror officers detained him. They quickly escorted him to a back room where they grilled him for over 5 hours about his reporting for this outlet. They also inquired about his personal opinion on everything from the current British political leadership to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. At one point, Clarenberg's interrogators demanded to know whether the Gray Zone had a special arrangement with Russia's Federal Security Bureau, FSB, to publish hacked material. During Clarenberg's detention, police seized the journalist's electronic devices and SD cards, fingerprinted him, took DNA swabs, and photographed him intensively. They threatened to arrest him if he did not comply. Clarenberg's interrogation appears to be London's way of retaliating for the journalist's blockbuster reports exposing major British and U.S. intelligence intrigues. In the past year alone, Clarenberg revealed how a cabal of Tory national security hardliners violated the Official Secrets Act to exploit Brexit and install Boris Johnson as prime minister. In October of 2022, he earned international headlines with his expose of British plans to bomb the Kerch Bridge, connecting Crimea to the Russian Federation. Then came his report on the CIA's recruitment of two 9/11 hijackers this April, a viral sensation that generated massive social media attention. Among Clarenberg's most consequential exposés was his June 2022 report unmasking British journalist Paul Mason as a UK security state collaborator hell-bent on destroying the Gray Zone and other media outlets, academics, and activists critical of NATO's role in Ukraine. Because Clarenberg's reporting on Mason relied heavily on leaked emails, Mason falsely accused him of, quote, assisting a Russian state-backed hack and leak disinformation campaign, end quote. Mason has also reported the leak of his emails to the British police. Emma Briant, a self-styled disinformation expert who participated in Mason's campaign to sabotage NATO critics, dispatched lawyers to demand Clarenberg remove all of his articles that mention her from the internet. The lawyers' letters also threatened costly super injunctions to prevent further reporting and challenge the authenticity of the email's content. The cease and desist letters additionally leveled false and defamatory allegations against Clarenberg, including that he was personally involved in hacking her email and Twitter account. Okay. Last year, I had Kit on my show to discuss his work on these stories, in particular the one about Paul Mason. And obviously, we can't be sure that that's what triggered his treatment at the airport recently. But I mean, does it even matter? His treatment is inexcusable regardless. He is a journalist doing journalism, and he was traveling home to visit with friends and family, and he was detained in the airport by counter-terror officials. DNA swabs and photographs and all, this is insanity. Okay, so this is again from the article. As soon as his flight landed at Luton Airport, the pilot announced that border police were quote unquote just around the corner and asked all passengers to prepare their passports. The police were waiting for Clarenberg at the bottom of the stairs, leading passengers from the plane to the tarmac. They immediately led him to a back room and informed him of his detention under Schedule 3, Section 4 of the 2019 Counterterrorism and Border Act. Six plainclothes officers surrounded Clarenberg and explained he faced arrest if he refused to answer their questions and hand over his personal electronics. They refused to tell him their names and offered call signs instead. Quote, I'd been expecting something like this since a police interview request arrived last summer, end quote, Clarenberg told the Gray Zone, referring to a communique he received from a senior British detective on July 27, 2022. The email requested Clarenberg report to a station to be questioned about allegations by an unknown complainant of offenses under the Computer Misuse act. Back in the interrogation room of Lutton, Clarenberg was asked which passports he held in his possession. Quote, they seemed surprised that I only had a British passport with me, end quote, he recalled. The police then grilled him about whether he owned foreign property, which countries he had visited, and why. He was compelled to provide his address in Belgrade, disclose how much he paid for rent, and bizarrely, whether his energy costs were included. The officers then demanded to know why Clarenberg lived in Serbia. From there, police interrogators homed in on Clarenberg's work with the Gray Zone. Quote, they asked which publications I wrote for, and I told them I wrote for many, end quote, he said. Quote, one even remarked they'd never previously heard of Mint Press Zone. Their overwhelming, if not exclusive interest was in the Gray Zone. So this whole thing has been going on for a long time, as Max alludes to. The Gray Zone has long been a target of, the establishment in general, Western establishment, the global elite, whatever you want to call them. And so this is a major escalation. This is a journalist, again, being detained and questioned extensively, interrogated essentially, photographed, fingerprinted, DNA swabs, his electronic devices were taken and most likely cloned. This is a crazy escalation. So I wish I could go through more of this article because it goes into even more detail about what he experienced. Please go to the Gray Zone, check out this article. It is out today. This is crazy. I talked to Kit. He's okay. He's shaken up. But I think he's okay. I think he was expecting this. Obviously it's not easy to deal with something like this, but he is at least okay. So hopefully I'll be able to talk with him a little bit more about this. Maybe we'll have him on the show to discuss this more in depth. So definitely check out that article in the Gray Zone and please support Kit Clarenberg. He is an amazing journalist and an even better human being. Okay. You can follow me over on the tweeters at Sarcasm Stardust. Check out the Substack, mistywinston.substack.com. There's a write-up every day for the guest of the day, so you can find, follow, and support their work as well. And it is springtime. It is almost summer. That means protests are going to be rampant. So if you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, fundraiser, whatever it is, that could do with some free publicity. I mean, who doesn't like free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Just visit the What's On Events calendar tab on the TNT Radio website, which is tntradio.live. And submit your event details, and we will get the word out for you right here on TNT Radio.
Engaged and informed conversation.
They say what I'm thinking.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The once wildly popular Me Too movement used to promote the idea that women who come forward with allegations of sexual assault deserve to be believed. Of course, that pretty much disappeared when Tara Reid, a former staffer for Joe Biden while he was a senator, made headlines when she came forward during Biden's 2020 presidential campaign and accused him of sexually assaulting her. She is now back in the headlines. During an appearance on Russian state TV, Reid says she has had to flee to Russia because she fears for her own safety in the U.S. Here with this story, joining me now is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Adam, what the heck is going on here?
Sounds like our friend Tara is a smart lady and she doesn't want to get Epstein'd or something, right? Hashtag.
Right.
Who knows? Smart move. I don't know. Maybe Russia was a bad place to pick because if NATO gets their way, they're going to bomb that country off the map, right?
So, right.
I hope she's safe out there. I hope everyone knows who she is. Listeners at TNT probably are. She's made a few appearances on various shows here. And a lot of us are aware she single-handedly destroyed some of the narratives and the agendas behind the Me Too movement, exposed them for being nothing but that, just a fake hashtag, and they didn't really mean it. Because as soon as you go against somebody like Biden, oh no, you can't do that. And they had to shut up all women. Look at what they're doing to women now with the trans stuff. But I'm going to go with the Daily Mail, the dreaded Daily Mail, as my friend Patrick Henningsen would say. Joe Biden accuser Tara Reid is seeking to defect to Russia, saying on a Kremlin-backed program that she fears for her own safety in her own home country. This is so sad, Misty. She made a series of stunning assertions while appearing on Russian state TV with Maria Butina, who herself is kind of a target of, being a victim of some stuff. She was convicted of acting as an unregistered foreign agent inside the United States while cultivating relationships with a series of U.S. political figures. Reid called Butina her friend. Butina, who was elected to the state Duma in Russia and subjected to U.S. sanctions after Russia's Ukraine invasion, said Reid made her decision on a visit to Moscow. Reeve said in an appearance that was aired on Sputnik, in case you wonder if she's really there, she's really there. You can see her. Quote, "I'm still kind of in a daze a bit, but I feel very good. I feel very surrounded by protection and safety, and I just really so appreciate Maria and everyone who's been giving me that at a time when it's been very difficult to know if I'm safe or not," end quote. She fielded questions from audience members during her appearance, where she bashed the U.S. position arming Ukraine following Russia's invasion. She said, quote, "It's very sad that America has chosen the wrong side in history," end quote, echoing Kremlin propaganda about the Ukrainian government. She described her, this is from the Daily Mail, remember. All right, so yeah. She described her visit to Moscow as breaking impressions. Quote, "The food tastes so good. There's no chemicals. There's no GMOs," she said. And quote, "I'm not just giving you a smokescreen," end quote. You know, it sounds pretty nice already, but hey. She said she wasn't sure whether or not she would go back to the U.S., even if Biden is replaced, although she expressed doubts that he's going to make it to run again. She said, quote, "I'm not sure if the new president will change anything for me. I have lawyers working right now to figure out, because some of the cases are sealed that are against me, so I don't know what they have in mind. But I do know this, that unfortunately the Democratic National Committee is quite corrupt. Unless that's dismantled and taken down, I'm not sure things will get better," end quote. Very sad. She told Sputnik, quote, "I just didn't want to walk home and walk into a cage or be killed, which is basically my two choices," end quote. According to the Daily Beast, she said, quote, "To my Russian brothers and sisters, I'm sorry right now that American elites are choosing to have such an aggressive stance. Just know that most American citizens do want to be friends," end quote. So obviously, propagandists are going to propagandize this story from all sides, probably three different layers. But you had mentioned to me that she's actually a friend of yours, so I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on all this.
Yes, full disclosure, I have been friends with Tara Reid for many years now, several years, and this makes me very sad that she has been pushed to make such an extreme decision. Obviously, picking up and leaving everything you've ever known and moving to a foreign country with a different language and a different, everything. I mean, to have to leave your family and your friends, and she has horses and she loves horses. And so having to pick up and completely upend your life and flee to a foreign country because you literally fear for your safety in your home country is really sad. And I'm very proud of her for as courageous as she has been over the past several years. I have been witness to everything that she has had to experience and the levels of smearing and slander, the attacks on her livelihood and financially and all of that stuff. And it's been an escalation really since the moment that she came out. And you're right. We brought up the Me Too movement, the so-called Me Too movement that was supposed to give a voice to women who were making accusations of sexual assault. And listen, I don't do the believe all women thing. I think that is a ridiculous notion. I mean, women lie. That's just a known thing. But I believe Tara Reid. There's no question in my mind that what she is telling is the truth. And the reason I believe that is because she's, first of all, not the only person that's accused Joe Biden of such misconduct. And also, he's on camera numerous times being physically inappropriate with not just women, but children. So this is not a stretch of the imagination to believe that Joe Biden is capable of something like this. I 100% believe her. It makes me very sad that my friend has been put in the situation where she has now had to flee to a foreign country in order to guarantee her safety. And it's still not a guarantee, but obviously I think she's much safer there than she is here. So yes, it does make me very sad. I'm hoping to get her on the show soon so that we can talk about it. It's really depressing. And like you just read in that Daily Mail thing, there are going to be people who will spend this. If you're on Twitter, you've seen it all day today. The people have been attacking her on Twitter nonstop. So if you are somebody who is so inclined to get on Twitter and to express support for her, I'm sure she would appreciate that. I know that her DMs are open. She leaves them open for other survivors so that they can contact her if they need to. Please send her a little word of encouragement. If you don't want to do it publicly, you can do it privately. I know that she is feeling very... I don't, overwhelmed, I think, is probably the best word. I don't want to speak for her, but I think that currently she is feeling rather overwhelmed. And I'm sure that she's, you know, this is a very scary situation for her, regardless of what she's fleeing from. I mean, again, to move to a completely foreign country and upend your life is a really terrifying prospect for most people. I hope it works out for her. I genuinely do. So, yes.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
It's probably a pretty good sign that she's not just doing this for attention or clicks or likes, right? You know, I mean, that's right. A pretty serious decision, obviously. So
yes. And people are on Twitter still, Adam. They're still today. Like, they're like, oh, you know, she's just doing this for attention, or she's a lie. Why? Why would you do that? Why would you open yourself up to these kinds of attacks, accusing somebody of that stature of anything? Everybody knows how that works. Everybody knows how that works. You will be destroyed. They will come for you. And every way possible. And so I have immense respect for her for having the courage to come forward and to have, you know, stood on her principles for all of these years since she came forward. And now, like you said, this is a major decision, and it is definitely not taken lightly. And I think it definitely solidifies the fact that she's legit. I mean, I don't think anybody would make these kinds of decisions, you know, just cause, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I don't know. I just feel really bad for her. I really do.
Yeah.
It's a terrible situation.
I'll keep her in my thoughts and my prayers personally, and I hope the listener does as well, because chances are pretty soon we're going to see a huge New York Times report bombshell that proves she's a Russian spy or something like that.
But, well, they've already, the New York Times already, I think it was the New York Times, maybe it was the Washington Post, one of them already published her social security number, you know, and there was no repercussions for that either. So they have done everything possible to try to destroy her. And so I'm glad that she is, I'm glad at least currently she is in a place where she feels safe. And I think that that is first and foremost, as her friend, I'm very appreciative of that. So thank you for bringing the story. Obviously, I have a little bit of a personal investment in this one. I am biased, I'm not going to lie. So hopefully we can get Tara on so that she can explain her side of the story. I'll work on that. Obviously, she's very busy right now trying to move across the world, but we'll see what we can do. So thanks for bringing us a story, Adam. Hang tight. We're going to be right back with our guest right after this, right here on TNT Radio.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
What is going on with the governments of our world ceding their authority to an unelected body, the WHO?
Well, I have a full briefing on the WHO treaty and the amendments to the international health regulations. They've got to be both looked at the same time. They both come from the WHO. Basically, for those who don't know, the WHO is an arm of the United Nations. It's based in Geneva. It's been in existence since about 1947. Its remit is to help world health, and it's got a charter, and that's all pretty benign. Until now, its recommendations have been advisory, but it's looking to get more powers. All their recommendations would be mandatory. Governments would have to abide by them. It gives the Director General, Mr. Dr. Tedros, who's a particularly dubious background, the ability to call a public health emergency of international concern, which they would take sweeping powers over all aspects of our lives. It's really pretty frightening.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
911.
Please help me.
Hello, sweetie. Stay calm. What's going on?
I need to get out of here. Help me, please.
I need you to calm down. I'll help you. First, tell me your name and your age, okay?
My name is Shelly. I'm 6 years old.
Shelly?
Yes.
Okay, honey, I'm right here with you. I'm going to help you through this, okay? Where are you?
I'm here in the square.
Are you trapped somewhere? Is that what you're trying to tell me? Are you trapped somewhere, Shelly?
It's very tight, and he doesn't let me out.
Shelly, is someone keeping you locked up there? Is that it?
Yes, there's a bad man. He asks me to do things, and if I don't, he hurts me. Please help me.
Calm down, okay?
He's getting close. He's coming. He's coming.
Shelly, are you listening? Shelly, I can't hear you. Shelly!
If I told you that Shelly is a whale, would you still help? Protect marine life. Support Sea Shepherd.
If you're talking about it,
China sent that surveillance balloon over.
We're talking about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Our guest today is journalist Dan Cohen. Dan has done amazing work on a whole host of issues, including co-producing the must-see documentary Killing Gaza. Also, his most recent film, Another Vision, Inside Haiti's Uprising. He's also been one of the only people I have seen covering the case of the Spanish-Russian journalist Pablo Gonzalez, which we are going to be discussing tonight. And he's also just returned from Colombia. So hopefully we'll be diving into that situation as well. You can follow Dan on Twitter at DanCohen3000, where you can also find a link tree that has links to all of his work. Dan, thanks for being here, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Misty.
Yeah, of course. It's always good to talk to you. So before we jump into the Pablo Gonzalez case, I wanted to ask you about what happened recently to Kit Clarenberg. I covered that at the beginning of the show. He was obviously detained at the airport in London and held for over 5 hours and photographed, and DNA swabs were taken and all of that stuff. I mean, you're a journalist. What do you think? I mean, it seems like the attacks on dissident journalism are ramping up extensively. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the UK intelligence apparatus is not pleased with what Kit Clarenberg has been reporting on, what he's been exposing. He's broken a number of really important stories about the UK, about UK spying, about its role in planning operations in Ukraine against Russia. So clearly the UK state is scared of Kit. And I think what they did to Kit, detaining him for 5 hours, going through all of his belongings, his hard drives, his all of his electronics, his cell phones, everything, is an attempt at intimidation. Obviously he didn't commit any crime, or else he would be charged with a crime and, you know, he'd be in jail. But no, it's totally an attempt at scaring him into stopping publishing the important work that he's been doing, and I think also to scare others. It's not only about Kit; it's about just chilling journalism in general. I think that's not only the persecution the detention of Kit Clarenberg, but obviously in the context of the persecution of Julian Assange. What we're going to discuss about the journalist Pablo Gonzalez, who's been locked up for more than a year. So it's a scary thing, really. It shows that the free press is under attack in the West.
100%. And I think that this is something that has been, I mean, we've talked about on this show numerous times. This is something that's been ramping up over the course of, I mean, really since forever. I think powerful people don't like their secrets exposed. And so the attacks on journalism have existed forever. But I think over the past 10, 15, 20 years, maybe, under Obama, I think it was ramped up exponentially. I think Trump just took that and ran with it. And I think that we're seeing the continuation of that escalation, which is terrifying. I mean, I worry greatly about, and I think that we have already seen an unbelievable chilling effect across journalism just from what's happening to Julian Assange. I think that and whistleblowing, both. I think both of those, with Chelsea, what happened to Chelsea Manning and what's happening to Julian Assange. And that is the intent behind this. I think that is, there's no question about it. They use these things and they use these cases, as you said, to create a chilling effect across all of journalism. And I think that there's no question that's already had an effect. And that's really, really unfortunate. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about another journalist who you actually brought to my attention. I'd heard a little bit about it, but hadn't really dived into it yet. But as you mentioned, it's Spanish-Russian journalist Pablo Gonzalez, who has been in prison for over a year now. So just tell us a little bit about who he is.
Yeah, so Pablo Gonzalez is, like you said, a Spanish-Russian journalist. He has both nationalities. His roots are in Spain. And when he was his parents went to Russia to flee the Franco dictatorship in Spain, which, you know, lasted, which was an ally of Nazi Germany and lasted until 2005. So he grew up in Russia. He's now 41 years old. He recently had his 41st birthday in prison in Poland. And he was he's basically a journalist who does a lot of work on the in the kind of former Soviet satellite states in Eastern Europe. That's his kind of area of expertise. He, of course, speaks fluent Russian and fluent Spanish. He was a freelance journalist working largely, mostly for Spanish media outlets, and some South American ones too. But so in February of 2022, shortly after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, he was reporting on the plight of Ukrainian refugees in Poland. So he was in a small town on the Polish side of the border, and he was arrested by Polish authorities and accused of being a Russian spy. And he was put into solitary confinement. He's basically he's in a prison inside a prison. So he's separated from all of the other prisoners, treated as some kind of, dangerous, high risk security threat. He spends 23 hours per day alone and indoors in solitary confinement. And he's allowed to go out on like a balcony, a little outside area, for 1 hour per day. And that's been the situation from February until now is what, 15, 16, we're going on into almost 16 months. And he has never been charged with any kind of crime. So he's only accused of being a Russian spy, but they've never, of course, leveled any charges nor presented any evidence. So they just keep renewing this detention again and again. And he has a family. I mean, aside from the journalistic impacts, there's of course the personal stuff. He has a wife and two children who are in Spain waiting for him. His wife Oiana, who I interviewed, has been doing everything she can to raise awareness. She's incredibly brave, and she's recently accepted a prize for him for his courageous journalism. But the Spanish political establishment is doing nothing for him. They don't say anything. Of course, some of the Reporters Without Borders.
Did we lose Dan? We may have lost him there. That's okay. We're going to take. Oh, we lost you there for a minute. Sorry, we lost you there for a minute. You might have to. Well, hold on. Let's take it. We got to take a quick break and get some headlines. Yeah, we have you back, but let's take a quick break. We're going to get some headlines, and then we'll continue talking about this. Again, this is something that is not getting near enough coverage, and it's astonishing to me. Not really astonishing, but something that definitely needs to be talked about more. So let's take a quick break, get some headlines. We're going to be right back right after this on TNT Radio.
We have some wonderful news for you.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Japan is exploring ways to beam solar power from space, a project expected to be tested out in 2025, even as concerns remain about costs involved in such projects. Ecozelic campaign group Just Stop Oil is set to receive a massive injection of cash in the next 48 hours, as Labor donor Dale Vince pledged to double the amount coughed up by activists in a bid to bolster Just Stop Oil's war chest.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, we are here and joined by Dan Cohen. We're talking about Pablo Gonzalez, who is a Spanish-Russian journalist who has been detained in Poland for over a year now, as Dan just mentioned, coming up on 16 months or entering into 16 months. So you were just talking a little bit about his family. I know that you had a chance to interview his wife. You mentioned to me that she's very courageous, and I can only imagine what she's trying to deal with, also trying to raise two young children. What is her feeling on? Is she hopeful that there's going to be resolution to this? What is it? Where does that stand right now?
So Oiana Gonzalez, when I spoke to her about 6 weeks ago is when I interviewed her. I've been in touch with her since, but she does remain hopeful that he's going to be released from prison eventually. But the fact is his time is just stolen for no reason, and so she's just so incensed by the absurdity that he's never been charged. There's no evidence against him. It's all just claims from Polish government officials. And, these are all recycled by the media, which, the big headlines saying, oh, Russian spy arrested in Poland, blah, blah, blah. This kind of thing. They just, as Western media always does, is just repeat the claims as if they're fact and don't examine and don't point out that, well, they haven't presented any evidence. So I mean, I also spoke to his lawyer, Gonzalo Boye, a famous Chilean journalist who lives in Spain. I spoke to him recently. He's, you know, he pointed out just how far below the European standard basically legal processes and human rights this case is, that it just doesn't meet any of it. And so Poland, you know, leading NATO member is totally hypocritical. I mean, I see this with the Biden administration too. The Biden administration loves to talk about the Wall Street Journal reporter who is arrested in Russia, accused mm-hmm. of being a spy, and demanding that he be released. But, you know, and frankly, if there's not evidence presented, if he's not charged with a crime and put on trial, you know, in some kind of fair trial, then yes, he definitely should be released. So there's innocence. You know, we have the concept of innocence is presumed until proven guilty. But the West, the United States, the Spanish government, the media, they do not apply that to their own side. You know, so but no one wants to talk about Pablo Gonzalez, and if they do, they just smear him as a Russian spy, and it's just it just shows how everything, whether it's, you know, women's rights, human rights, free press, any of that, the West, and I mean, honestly, especially Democrats, these are just concepts to be exploited to obtain power. They don't actually believe in anything, only obtaining power. And, you know, the case of Pablo Gonzalez highlights that hypocrisy so yeah. well.
Yes, yes. And I think that they have, I mean, I talk about it, we laugh about it all the time, because every like World Press Freedom Day, there's tweets that come out from Kamala Harris and Antony Blinken about how press freedom is the foundation of a democracy. And I'm like, really? I mean, really? The hypocrisy could not be thicker. And you mentioned that the Spanish government is doing nothing. Have they said anything, literally anything about this, or are they completely silent?
No, officially, I don't think they've. I haven't seen any statement from them. I'm not aware of any statement. I mean, to put it, you know, so you understand who the Spanish government is. The Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, he is. Oh man, this is too good. He's the leader of. So he's the leader of the Spanish Socialist Workers Party, which sounds like a socialist party, except it's a completely neoliberal invention, pro-Ukraine, pro-Zelensky, et cetera, et cetera. There's a general election coming soon. If he loses, which is likely, because his party just got shellacked in regional and local elections, he is rumored to be the next NATO Secretary General. So he's going to replace Jens Stoltenberg. So obviously, he, Pedro says, Prime Minister of let alone using his political power the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, not going to be using his political power to push for the freedom of Pablo Gonzalez.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'm just reading here on worldsocialistwebsite.org that he, a guy named Alvarez, I don't know if I'm saying that right, he did say something about, made it clear, he said that he made it clear that the government would do nothing to defend Gonzalez, and said, and this is something that they, that the Australian government says all the time. He said, quote, "We have to respect the Polish legal system in this matter. What I'm asking is that as soon as possible, he can be brought to trial where he has a right to legal defense, and as he has already had, his lawyers know the charges, he can present whatever appeals he wants. Meaning Gonzalez has access to him." So that's not actually true, right? Like there are no charges, correct?
Exactly. There are no charges. And, you know, if that's something maybe you say at the beginning, you know, the first yeah. month of his detention, but after 15, 16 months, you don't see, oh, just put him on trial. They'll put him on trial. It's like, no, they haven't put him on trial. And they haven't presented any evidence. So now it's time to let him be free, to release him yes. from prison.
Yeah. So yes, it's absurd. It's like Assange being held right now, is currently being held on remand. No charges. He's essentially just being held because the United States says so, and they are seeking extradition, and the UK is just going along with it. And in fact, the judge in that case, you know, said that he should be released and then denied him bail. But this is exactly the kind of this is the scare tactic that they use. If you are a journalist and you report on things outside of the approved narrative, this is what they're going to do to you. And that is why these kinds of cases are dragged out for so long. Is it typical? I'm not familiar with the Polish legal system. Is it typical for a case like this to take this long or for somebody to be held for 15, 16 months without charge?
No. You know, when I asked Gonzalo Boye, Pablo Gonzalez's lawyer, about that, and he said this is way out of the norm. I mean, he said he's actually never really seen – he said, you know, I've done cases all over the world. I mean, he's Gonzalo Boye has – he tried to prosecute Bush administration officials for war crimes against Spaniards in Iraq, for example. So this guy's – he's a high-profile lawyer. He's done stuff all over the world for various causes. He said he's never seen anything this egregious.
Yeah. Yes, this is insane. I mean, it's insane. And when I really started, again, I'd heard about it kind of on the periphery. I'd heard the name and, I just hadn't gotten around to really reading into it. And when you sent it to me and I started digging into it, it's astonishing to me that something like this, again, the Assange thing is happening in broad daylight out in the open. What's happening to Gonzalez is also happening out in the open. And there's really not a lot of pushback on these issues. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that the mainstream, Western media doesn't talk about these things. Like I said, you're one of the only people I've seen covering this. There's been a couple other small articles here and there. Like I said, I'm looking at one from January from World Socialist website, .org, who I have my issues with them on some things, but I mean, this is a good article. So it is astonishing to me that these kinds of things, that they can get away with this stuff. It's so brazen. It is such a brazen attack on press freedom, global press freedom. And I think that this is something that it's fascinating to me that it doesn't concern more people. So we have to take another quick break. Hang tight, everybody. We're going to be right back with more from Dan Cohen right after this here on TNT Radio.
Bravo! EU Member of Parliament nails how to fight back on the Great Reset. You cannot comply your way out of tyranny.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
EU Member of Parliament Christine Anderson had these sage words of advice to the rest of us.
You cannot comply your way out of a tyranny. It is impossible. Trying to do so, you will only feed a gigantic alligator in the hopes of being eaten last. But guess what? Your turn will come.
Bravo, EU MEP Christine Anderson. Anderson went on to say, speak up, stop complying, start rebelling. She concluded with, I have decided to become so absolutely free that my very existence is an act of rebellion. Tyranny only happens with the consent of the governed. It is time to fight the Great Reset. Join the Great Reject. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
What's the last thing you'd like to hear before you die? The voice of a loved one? Your favourite tune? The ocean? For some drivers on the A9, the last thing they ever heard was this. Over half of all deaths on the A9 involve a head-on collision. Think before you overtake. Visit a9road.info.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we are here with Dan Cohen. We're talking about a ridiculous case of a journalist who's being held in Poland. So I wanted to ask you before we move, I want to talk to you a little bit about your trip to Colombia. But before we move on to that, is there any way, obviously, I think talking about it, getting the word out, obviously, that's very helpful. Is there any other way that we can help his wife, his situation, his case? Do they have a legal fund? What can people do to help if they feel so inclined?
I'm not aware of any legal fund that they have set up. They haven't informed me about that. However, yeah, I mean, the key thing really, I think, is just raising our voices, tweeting about it, talking about it online, any kind of demonstrations. When you go to Free Assange, rallies, talk about Pablo Gonzalez too. Just hashtag Free Pablo Gonzalez, and just get it more into the media sphere, because it's kind of, what I found is it's few people know much about it. There's not a lot of content in English about the case. So, I think this kind of thing, just getting the message out, is the most important thing we can do.
Yes. I mean, especially given the fact that, like I said, there is kind of a blackout. Nobody's really talking about it. If you're in the indie media space, and I know many of you are listening right now, this is something you need to cover, please and thank you. Do a show on it, spread the word. Go ahead.
Check out my interview I did with Pablo Gonzalez's wife, Oiana. It's on Redacted. It's on Redacted's YouTube channel. If you dig around on there, I'll try to put a link up in my
Link, I can include it. I do a Substack write-up for the guest every day. If you send me the link to it, I can include that in the Substack, so that'll make it easier for people to find. And then also I can tweet it out. You can tweet it out, so people can find it easier. Because definitely. Yes, I think that is probably the biggest thing, is just getting the word out, because I don't think, even in our circles, people who are fairly well-informed and who are paying attention to this kind of a thing, I haven't heard anybody talking about it. So the more that we can push the information out, obviously the better. Okay.
Exactly.
So let's move on. You just got back from Colombia. I want to make sure we have some time to talk about that, because there's a lot going on there. So what prompted your trip, and what was your experience like there?
Well, basically, I spent roughly a week deep in the jungles of southwestern Colombia in an area called Cauca, and in a kind of municipality, like a kind of a series of villages called Argelia. And in that area, there's very, very intense armed conflict, despite a peace accord, a groundbreaking peace accord that was signed in 2016 between the government and the FARC, which is the armed Marxist-Leninist revolutionary group. And so that group in 2016 laid down its arms and basically said, okay, we're going to reintegrate into society. And the government was supposed to basically take that region and develop its economy. That's where basically most of the world's cocaine comes from. It's all coca plants forever and ever, as far as you can see out there. Basically, farmers are forced to subsist off of coca, off of growing coca and making very little and working in horrible conditions, basically so people in the U.S. and Europe and Asia can snort cocaine. And so what's happened since that peace accord is there are a few groups remaining, that are still at war. And it's a result of essentially the U.S. trying to destroy the peace accord. So actually I see the peace accord itself, this 2016 peace accord, as a trap. So what happened is, in 1999, 2000, the United States backed the Colombian government, basically pushed the Colombian government to negotiate with the FARC. And at the same time, it was planning out this thing called Plan Colombia, which was a major counterinsurgency process initiated by the Clinton administration and really executed by the Bush administration. And so as there are these peace negotiations, these peace talks, the Colombian government implements the U.S.'s plan to wipe out the FARC. So over the next 10 plus years, the Colombian government, with the help of the CIA, just basically beats the FARC down into a shell of itself. And then in 2011, initiates secret peace talks. So the Colombian government approaches the FARC, whose leadership had been wiped out, whose rank and file had been annihilated, and said, okay, let's negotiate peace, if we can call it that. So the FARC eventually agreed to it, and they said, okay, well, we're going to lay down our arms, and the government has to come in, the state has to come in and develop the economy. So plant bananas and mangoes and coffee and all these, you know, regular products, commodities, and get them to national and international markets. So the FARC laid down their weapons, but the state never fulfilled its promises. And now we're three administrations later. So what's happened is, people are still forced to grow coca. There are a variety of armed groups that are fighting for control of drug trafficking corridors. And people are living in absolute poverty and insecurity. And so the U.S. actually even tried to plotted an entrapment. There was an entrapment plot against the leaders of the FARC who negotiated peace. And so the whole idea was to have a peace accord in order to get the FARC to lay down their weapons and then destroy it and criminalize the FARC leaders so they could imprison them and just or kill them off. And so that's the situation now. And there's no reporting about it in English language media. Social leaders are being killed by these kind of paramilitaries and different groups. And so reports coming out in the next few weeks or month for Redacted.
Yeah, there's been literally hundreds of murders, correct?
Yeah, so since 2016, more than, I think there's been about 300 ex-combatants killed. So this is ex-FARC members who agreed to lay down their weapons and integrate into society. And there's been about 1,200 social leaders. So, you know, these are farmers who try to organize against corporate takeovers of their land and this kind of thing. Those people are all just being wiped out. So it's really the U.S. government, the Colombian government, corporations, all in cahoots to take out, to basically kill anybody who is organizing against basically, you know, the corporate takeover of that beautiful, rural, extremely rich land. I mean, not only do the plants grow extremely well there, but there's a ton of minerals, there's gold, there's all kinds of things. So there's oil. So it's hotly contested. And just, you know, for these corporations, it's a matter of kicking the people off and finding a way to do that.
Yeah. Yes. And I know I read an article not long ago that talked about the supposed this kind of breakaway faction, breakaway organization of FARC. And there was supposedly some peace talks that were supposed to be taking place, I think, in mid-May. Have you heard anything mm-hmm. about those peace talks or what went down there? Were they productive in any way? You know, what was the outcome of that?
Yeah. So essentially, there are two kind of main groups of the FARC that now reject the peace accord. One of them, from the very beginning, basically rejected it said, we're not going to participate in that. It's hard to tell if that's a totally ideological thing, that they correctly saw it as like a trap in which, you know, they wouldn't be able to defend themselves and the government would come in and kill them, or if it was purely because they want to be in the business of drug trafficking. And then the other group is called the Second Marcatalia. Now, those are that is headed by the leaders of the FARC that actually negotiated the peace accord. So after they negotiated the peace accord, right, I said the U.S. and Colombian government, specifically the DA negotiators from the FARC, and they framed him to basically they have these terrible videos that they've edited in a really terrible way, where they faked a meeting. They had a meeting with this guy, and they said, oh, these guys were actually traffickers from the Sinaloa cartel. And actually, it was just some guys pretending to be traffickers, and they filmed it. And the discussion was actually about selling books of poetry, getting a deal for poetry books. But they said it was huge amounts of cocaine to go to the U.S. So they put this leader in prison. And then he ended up. The government was forced to release him. He fled for the mountains, and he and a couple of other guys who are also peace negotiators said, "Okay, well, we're going back to be guerrilla fighters. If you know you led a plot against us, obviously you're not serious about peace." So you have that group is in peace talks with the government, as well as the other one, the Western Front. Is in peace talks with the government. Well, at the same time, those two FARC groups are fighting each other. They're both, it's like a fratricidal war where they're both trying to claim the mantle of the original FARC. So it's just a brutal situation.
Yeah. I mean, what is the position of Petro? I mean, he's supposedly a leftist, right? Gustavo Petro, the president. What's the governmental position? I mean, obviously, forward facing, they're, you know, engaging in these so-called peace talks. But what is, I mean, it seems to me as if there's some, you know, some accountability there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So all of these people voted for Petro, like all of the FARC people, all of the people in the countryside, like 95% voted for Petro, who's a former guerrilla himself, actually.
Right.
And Petro was never a huge supporter of the peace accord, kind of ironically. However, he has a plan called Total Peace. That's what he calls it, Total Peace, which, you know, the idea is to implement all of these agreements with all of these groups and dismantle the armed groups. But the people that I spoke to, and that's social leaders, that's ex-combatants, people who are all believe in the peace accord and are waiting for it to be fulfilled, they haven't seen, they're all saying, we haven't seen him do anything for us. Like nothing has been done. And now it's like month 8 or month 9 of the Petro presidency. So it's unclear to me whether it's a lack of political will, whether it's limitations because of a right-wing Congress that is, you know, does not want peace. But, you know, that's so Petro on paper supports, has a plan, but it hasn't really been implemented, at least to this point of most of the way through the first year of his presidency, and he has 4 years. So it kind of remains to be seen what happens, but you know, people are just being killed off in the meantime. When in my piece, you'll see a good guy I've become good friends with, a social leader named Guillermo Mosquera. There was an assassination attempt on his life too. In fact, the second one was caught on camera. He was shot point blank with a pistol.
Wow.
Except the pistol jammed, so he managed to run away while the assassin reloaded. So, I mean, I just interviewed right before I left. I got on the plane to leave. I interviewed an ex-FARC combatant who was a taxi driver. He went to pick some guy up, and he was hailed, and the guy shot him in the face. The bullet would have gone right through his brain had he not turned his head, so it went through his cheeks instead. So, I mean, people are just being killed off left and right. So it could not be more urgent.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I remember when, you know, the election was going on there, and everybody, there was a big debate over whether Petro was a legitimate lefty or if he was just kind of this, you know, kind of like neo-lib sort of a Western controlled kind of guy. And I think that it doesn't speak. Well, I mean, maybe you didn't speak to the people there about generally how they feel. Maybe you did, but I'm sure you did, generally how they feel about the Petro presidency. I mean, do they generally support him still? I know that you said that, you know, like 90-95% of these people voted for him. Is this, are they still in support of him, or are they starting to become a little disillusioned?
Pretty much everyone I spoke to is still in support, you know, because, I mean, for Petro to have won was a huge, huge thing for Colombia, which, you know, Colombia has been ruled by basically drug cartels and politicians associated with them for years and years and years and years. For decades. So suddenly you have this progressive president. So they're all like, well, this is our best shot and we don't want to go back to war. I asked a lot of these people, you know, the ex-combatants, if things do not improve in a few years, the Petro presidency doesn't pan out like you hoped, and there's not like a real peace, would you consider, you know, going back to being a guerrilla fighter? And none of them wanted to entertain the thought. They're all like, that's not the idea. That's not what we signed up for. We signed a peace accord. So they really, really do not want to. And that's the overwhelming majority of them. I mean, I do have, you know, real questions about Petro. You know, he appeared at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
Yes.
he's very big into the green, the whole green transition, which, you know, I see as part of the whole Great Reset agenda, very much. You know, part of the plan of kind of U.S. empire. There's also, you know, his vice president, Francia Marquez. She just posted publicly on Twitter thanking George Soros's Open Society Foundation for financing her trip as the vice president to Africa. She went to a few African countries. She's also tied to USAID. You know, I have big questions about the Petro presidency overall, but it's, you know, considering how horrible the last president was, Iván Duque, he was exposed for being his campaign basically won because of drug traffickers. There were huge cartels that paid people to go out and vote for him, and he's very close with drug traffickers. It's hard to blame them. Hard to blame these people for, you know, after 8 months saying like, okay, this is not working so far, but like we're still hopeful, because the alternative, what they've been through, has just been so bad. Right. And, you know, in all honesty, I think a lot of people are not focused on the kind of geopolitics. I mean, you're talking about rural people who are living their lives and understand their context nationally and maybe, you know, in the region. But overall, I think it's, you know, they're dealing with in some ways very powerful forces that not everyone necessarily understands the kind of global scale and implications of.
I absolutely agree. And I know that Pasta and Fee went to Colombia to observe their elections. And they said, you know, listen, these are people who, they, like you said, they've been devastated for decades. And they were just like, Petro was, you know, just a happy, like, you know, it's just a mild improvement. Like that's, they were just looking for something slightly better than what they were dealing. And that's, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully he is a little bit better than we anticipate. But I think that, you know, these are people who are literally just trying to survive at this point. So, but this, I can't wait to see your piece on this when it comes out, and we can find that on Redacted, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, cool. So everybody check out Dan's work. You can follow him on Twitter at DanCohen3000. You can find links to all of his stuff on my Substack as well. That piece will be coming out soon, so definitely don't miss it. Check out all of his work, Killing Gaza, his new documentary on Haiti, all of that good stuff. Dan, thanks for taking the time to come on. I really appreciate it. And as Julian Assange says, learn, challenge, act now. Don't go anywhere. Timothy Shea is coming up for you right after this, right here on TNT Radio.